Hello and welcome to another episode of the Men with Golden Tongues. My name is Micah. I am joined by my co-host Brad.
What is going on?
And today, ladies and gentlemen, we are here to talk about the cold opens to the James Bond films. We're going to give our top 10 and bottom 5 cold opens. These are the little scenes before the elaborate title sequences. They are a staple of the franchise. They set the tone for, well, they are supposed to set the tone for the movie that you're about to see. Some of them don't really match. But we're here to talk about our favorites and least favorites. See, now, how do you want to do this?
Well, I mean, we'll start with the bottom five and then we'll do the top 10. We always like to start with the bad and end with the good. It's funny because, like, I actually sometimes I like the ones that are like little unrelated mini adventures, or at least ones that don't appear related at first glance. Like, it takes a while to kind of connect them in. These are extremely important because unless your first James Bond movie was Dr. No, a lot of times a cold open is your first impression of James Bond, because this is the first thing that you see when the movie starts. Very interested to see how this shakes out. Unlike movie rankings and things of that nature, me and Micah might differ slightly, though I predict that we will have the same number one. As we do if when we're going to go, you know, bottom to top, and if someone has it higher on their list, before we get started, they will interrupt that person. We will talk about it at its highest point, or lowest point, as it were, in the case of the bottom five, which we'll start with. So
let's start. Number five, so we're going from with regards to the bottom five. Mm-hmm. It is the least offensive to the most offensive to the person.
Yes, but these are also pretty, I mean, they're all going to be pretty offensive because it's the bottom five.
They're all pretty offensive. This might be a surprise pick, and this was a toss-up between, this and On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Live and Let Die. Now, you would think, because I'm a black person, that I would love to see a bunch of black people killing white people for no reason. But this gets put on the bottom for one specific reason. There's no James Bond in it.
Yeah.
There's no James Bond. Like, okay. It's just like, all right, I get it. Right. You got these agents that are being killed, and it's just kind of weird. And there's no James Bond. Like, there's another one that doesn't have a James Bond in it, but it's like the Man with the Golden Gun doesn't have James Bond in it, but James Bond is in it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As a wax figure. So, you know,
we may talk about that particular title sequence later on in the show. Perhaps not where you were expecting to talk about it, but we'll see. We'll have to save that for later.
Excellent.
I agree with you. So Live and Let Die didn't make either of my lists, so it exists in the limbo between good and bad for a lot of the same reasons that you elaborated. The fact that I actually like the sequence of events in this title sequence. Kananga, a henchman, kills somebody via ear dynamite, as we've talked about before. You have the cool New Orleans funeral march murder that happens.
I do like that. And like, whose funeral is it, buddy? Yours.
Right.
Bam.
Shank. And then you get the wild fucking voodoo killing with the snakes later. So, like I said, cool sequence of events, but like you mentioned, it doesn't feature James Bond in the first outing of Roger Moore. Like, you figured you'd want to introduce us to him right away. No. We have to establish the plot. I feel like that in this one they could have done an unrelated mini adventure to establish Roger Moore, and then started the movie with the killing of the people. So I think that would have been more effective.
Yeah, exactly.
My number five is The World Is Not Enough.
Oh my God, Brad, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, this is going to be very interesting. It is on one of my lists.
Okay, but it's not on the list.
It's not on the list that we're doing.
Okay, so I won't say too much about it then. So basically, I'll get the bad points out of the way. Then later on, you can explain to us why it's good. It's too fucking long. It's too fucking long. If it had ended, like, I like the scene at the Swiss bank. If it had ended with him rappelling down to the street and then they went right to the title sequence from there, it actually would have been fucking perfect. Like, it actually probably would have been in my top 10 if it just that part was the title sequence. And then you do, you know, returning to MI6 with the money as the opening of the film. But this is like a 10-minute title sequence. Like
it's 15 minutes.
It's 15 minutes. Holy shit.
It's the longest one.
And that said, the boat chase is not my favorite. It's not my favorite vehicle chase in the Bond films. It's too gimmicky for my liking. Like, Bond, like, even though it's a very Brosnan-esque move, I really don't like, you know, the going underwater and then, like, straightening the tie while he's underwater and then coming back up again. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the way he gets off the boat, it's kind of like the end of Face Off as well. I feel like they borrowed too liberally from that film. And it's too long. Like I said, if you just do the first half, it's a great title sequence. The fact that you stretch it out, and like you said, Micah, 15 minutes. That's if I'm pretty sure that's like a tenth of the entire movie. So it's the length that gets me. That's why it's relatively low on my hated list.
I understand,
but it's too long.
I understand. Next up, number four on my bottom list is Octopussy. You know, one brown face. Come on, man. What are you doing? What are you doing? I mean, it's not that egregious, but like, it's just the thing that sticks with me, right? Second, it's ludicrous. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, all right, you get in this disguise and you have this like a literal Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
But then in that Trojan horse is a plane.
Mm-hmm.
What's with all the faux cloak and dagger brown face? Like, it feels like it's just a reason for you to impersonate Toro, right? If you got a plane and you're just going to do flybys and blow the thing up, like, just do that from the beginning. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. The plane sequence saves that for me. That's interesting that you're offended. I mean, he doesn't really do brown face. He just puts a fake mustache on and a military uniform.
Nah, I don't like it. I don't like it. Plus, it's part of my unreasonable, you know, like, Roger Moore hate.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry, Roger Moore is gonna get his. He's gonna get his love.
Yeah, in this one, he will.
But I don't know.
In a couple spots. So.
Yeah. So, you know, again, this is probably my hang up, but I'm just not a fan of this. It's not as exciting to me as I thought it would be.
Okay. My number four, is Die Another Day. If you guys listen to the Die Another Day episode, I perfectly illustrate, why this title sequence is ludicrous. I mean, the movie begins with James Bond and friends surfing into North Korea in the dead of night. On crazy fucking, like, you know, crazy MI6 spy surfboards that have, like, all kinds of shit in them. I kind of like the arms deal sequence. You know, Bond disguises himself as an arms dealer, you know, doing the arms deal with General Moon. Or, well, not, I guess it's not General Moon. Whatever the kid's fucking rank is. And then you have this weird hovercraft chase, which is also fucking weird. You know, James Bond holds up a bulletproof vest to stop from getting shot.
I forgot about
that. that whole sequence. Again, it's also pretty long. I mean, all the Brosnan ones tend to be are much longer than most of the other ones in the series. I hate, of course, you know, we all dislike Die Another Day very strongly. It kicks off on a sour note, with this title sequence. So yeah, it's my number four.
Well, in that same vein,
mm-hmm.
of James Bond on some sort of a board conveyance, escaping danger in the most ludicrous of fashions, A View to a Kill is my next one.
Oh, is that your number three?
Yes.
It's also my number three as well.
Yo, come on, man. what are we doing, right? Like, okay. Bond.
I liked it better when they did this in The Spy Who Loved Me. This is basically aping the title sequence from A Spy Who Loved Me without the parachute jump. Instead, you have the submarine that has the Union Jack entry hole or whatever the fuck that thing's called. This title sequence would be a lot less offensive as if it weren't for the California Girls interlude.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Like, as what, like, I could buy James Bond snowboarding with a ski, with one ski away from danger, right? Because this is a James Bond movie, right? Like, I get it. But then you play California Girls, and one, it sounds ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And two, like, it's not as if the song, like, the song doesn't fit the scene on multiple levels, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not in California. You're not in a warm climate. You're not like the Beach Boys. It's the Beach Boys. You're not on a beach. It's a very like stereotypical American song. You're in Russia. Like it doesn't, I hate it.
It's awful.
And it feels terrible.
Yeah. It's not good. And then yeah, it's not a good title sequence. The submarine is cool. Like the Glacier sub is fine. Or I guess it's more of a glacier boat. I guess it's not really a submarine. But yeah, the California Girls thing absolutely ruins it, which is a shame because usually I love when they do like the ski sequences and they get Willie Bogner to fucking do his crazy backwards skiing, holding a camera insanity that he does. But yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame. And again, because View to a Kill is a derivative movie, it doesn't surprise me that it starts with a derivative title sequence.
There you go. My number two is Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah.
I also have that at number two as well. I'm not even kidding. Our number one's probably going to be the same too. Oh my God, this is going to be awful. I thought we were going to vary too much on this.
Yo, Diamonds Are Forever, like this title sequence is very jarring, right? Like there's a certain amount of sexism and stuff in Bond, but it felt really weird to see Sean Connery like choke out a bikini clad woman mm-hmm. with her bikini top. And like, I get why he's upset. Because this comes off of On Her Majesty's Secret Service at the end of that film. Bond's wife is dead, is murdered, and he's looking for Blofeld, right? But in terms of storytelling and James Bond lore, the movie opens up with Bond questioning, you know, he's in Japan for some reason. He's like, where is he? I won't ask nicely next time. Which
with really awful like 80. Well, because it was 80 yard like crazy. Like yeah. Connery's not actually doing any of that shit until he gets to the woman whose bikini top he tries to strangle with. Essentially, yeah. The rest is just 80 yard bullshit. So it sounds really off.
It sounds very terrible.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help that this is also the movie where Connery really just lets the lisp go for the first time. He sounds incredibly Scottish when he's you know running around doing all this shit.
Yeah, he really didn't want to.
And then the Blofeld like cloning facility thing is also weird. Like the dude, you know, the one that's hiding in the mud bath. You see the pistol like emerge. Yeah,
why does he have a gun?
I don't know. In a hot mud bath. I can't imagine that's dangerous.
Where did James Bond get a water gun? To just like, oh, I got to wipe this guy's face off here. Let me just pull this water.
Well, and don't you like the way that he thwarts him is to just dump more mud into the mud bath? Like this dude is fully submerged in this like mud bath thing. And like Connor's like, oh, I'll drown him in more mud. I'm like, he's already in there. That weird like fucking pocket mousetrap thing that Bond has as well. Yeah, to prevent like, there's so much insanity in this in this first scene.
It's just silly. So I don't care for this. Wow, I can't believe.
Well, we're about to find out if we're going to hit the trifecta because in my mind for the worst James Bond title sequence, there truly is only one possible choice. I knew this was going to be it immediately as soon as we decided we were going to do this episode. For me, my number one is the title sequence from For Your Eyes Only.
God damn it!
Yeah, well, it's the only logical choice. Yeah, it's man. So bad.
It's terrible.
It's so bad.
Terrible, dude. Like, come on, man. Like, first of all, okay, we're going back to the well of I gotta go get Blofeld because he murdered my wife, right?
Not even. Blofeld goes after Bond. Like, it's not even like Bond is trying to stunt on him. Like, Blofeld comes after James Bond. What a terrible, ignominious way to dispatch your greatest rival.
It is your arch rival, dude. And everything about it is silly. Blofeld's last lines are, "We can make a deal. I'll buy you a delicatessen. It's made of stainless steel."
I'll buy you a serving tray.
Yo, come on, man. this is just offensive. Well, this is offensive as a Bond fan, and even as a casual like Bond movie goer. Like, if you know anything about this franchise, like this is just fuck you.
Yeah, Blofeld, like as he's like torturing Bond on this remote controlled helicopter, like he's spouting off these horrendous puns. as he's fucking with Bond on the radio. And the problem is they couldn't even the reason they did this is because they were still tied up in litigation with Kevin McClory, who would go on to produce Never Say Never Again the following year, and they weren't allowed to use the Blofeld character. This guy was credited as man in wheelchair in the final credits, and they just did it to I guess kill him off in a very silly fashion because they knew that the other movie was going to come out at some point. But this is awful. Like this is a really awful title sequence that really poorly does, you know, again, one of the landmark villains in James Bond history. And it's just stupid. It's just so stupid.
Yeah.
And there's even a shitty fucking slide, like because we can't get away from shitty slide whistle sound effects when he dumps him down the chimney stack. You get the descent. It's so bad. Like I said, this was the easiest one to figure out on the entire list.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Good. Now that we've taken out the trash, let's talk about the ones that we do like. Our top 10. Now this is actually very difficult for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to say these in order, mm-hmm. but just know that most of them can be interchangeable. But I had to pick an order.
Not for me. Not for me. This is a rigid top 10.
my number 10 is Casino Royale.
Oh my goodness! Are you kidding? We have to wait. We have to wait to talk about it. I'm shocked. We have to wait a while to talk about it. So we'll talk about that one much later on. My number 10. Now we just made a big stink about James Bond not being in title sequence being a huge faux pas. My number 10 is still the Man with the Golden Guns title sequence, even though Bond doesn't technically appear in this, mostly because it makes the main villain of the movie look very formidable, which if you're not going to feature Bond, you might as well do that. It also has one of the greatest irreverent lines in the entire James Bond franchise, the opening line of the film, which of course is knick-knack Tabasco being screamed to his manservant. It's just a really cool technique. Like I said, it kind of gives you an insight onto how Scaramanga works, how his relationship is with Nick Knack. It shows you the interesting, like, funhouse motif that would, of course, come around. And sets up the climax of the film as well, because they kind of tease the ending. Maybe it teases it too hard. Like, as soon as you see that Roger Moore mannequin, you can probably guess that it's going to be involved in some way, shape, or form as the film goes along. But I really do enjoy this title sequence. It's fun to me. I'm offended that, I'm not offended because you didn't put it in your bottom. So
no, I didn't put it in my bottom. It was actually my number 11.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because I really love the entirety of that movie. And I love Scaramanga as a character. Like, I love when protagonists have to outmatch their evil opposite, basically. Mm-hmm. And Scaramanga is a badass. So it was very close. But Casino Royale featured Bond in it. That's the only reason it eked out.
Edged it out. Okay. Very cool.
My number nine, I didn't hate this movie, but I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy the opening title sequence of Quantum of Solace.
Oh, stow that one. That's that also appears higher on my list as well. This is going to be interesting then, because we seem to have a lot of variants so far.
Yeah, and it's funny. We have variants, but only in like positioning.
Right. Well, we'll see. Like I said, I'm curious to see if you have anything that's on my list. My number nine is, for my money, probably like from an action sequence standpoint, the best introduction. Actually, there's one later on the list that's a better introduction to James Bond, but Timothy Dalton's introduction to James Bond was pretty good in this here title sequence from The Living Daylights, which is my number nine. It's an interesting concept. You have 00 agents training on the Rock of Gibraltar in like a paintball competition, and a devious, I guess, Russian, but we find out it's not really a Russian organization, uses this to try to assassinate a couple MI6 agents. It's very clever beginning. There's some humor in it, starting with M having a mobile office on a cargo plane, which is pretty fucking funny to me. Timothy Dalton does a fun chase on top of like a Jeep, chasing down the guy that just murdered two of his compatriots. It's got a cool ending where in the back of the car that's filled with explosives, he, you know, pulls his parachute to get out of it, lands on a boat, immediately has sex with a girl, very Bondian as well. Just a fun opening title sequence. There's another Dalton title sequence, that appears later in my list as well. So they did those really well, I think, with his two films at least.
Yeah.
Living Daylight's my number nine.
My number eight is Spectre.
Ah. Hold that thought for a very short period of time. Micah apparently doesn't get to talk until much later in the top ten. So you don't have to wait long for this one, though. You don't have to wait long for this one. So my number eight is Thunderball. Nothing?
Okay. You're going to have to wait.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fair enough.
You're going to have to wait. Yeah, you're going to have to wait. Wait on Thunderball. My number seven is Goldfinger.
You have to pause on that one as well. This is great, great radio we're producing right now. Let's not talk about any of this stuff. God damn it. Well, let's talk about Spectre, because I have Spectre at number seven.
Right, I think... the only thing that the only thing that's really outstandingly noticeable in Spectre is the CGI. You know, yeah. A lot of the CGI is a little sloppy, but I love the way the opening scene is shot. I love that it is the Day of the Dead motif. Like you don't see that culture represented in things that aren't directly focused on that culture. I love the way that the thing is shot. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a really cool action sequence. It's something that the Daniel Craig movies, their opening action sequences are like mini movies unto themselves. Mm-hmm. Their opening sequences, and I don't know. I really like this one. He's hunting that one operative Scaria or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think Sam Mendes does an excellent job with this scene.
Yeah, and it really is the cinematography that makes it. I'm a sucker for like one shot takes that are extended sequences that, you know, transition through multiple scenes. And they probably didn't actually do that on one shot. Like, there's probably some clever transition shots that made it appear as if they did a one take, but the illusion is preserved. James Bond accidentally blowing up a building is pretty fucking funny. And then the helicopter sequence, which could be over the top, and it probably is a little over the top for some folks. I know Terrence didn't care for it that much. I thought it was actually pretty done. A lot of it had to do with the internal camera angles they use, like the tight shots they use of fighting inside the helicopter. And like I said, the helicopter was, you know, doing backflips and shit. So that's always fun. yeah, this was really good. I think it was one of the more notable parts of the film in general. A really solid title sequence for sure.
So your number seven,
yes.
Because my number seven is Goldfinger.
Yes, and we'll talk about that one later. So how about your number six?
My number six is Skyfall.
Oh, good. This isn't on my list at all, so I'm curious to hear you defend this because this almost made my bottom list.
Really?
Yeah.
The only thing I don't particularly care for, I like the action in the scene. The everything that Bond does, like, I know you don't really care for, like, the, I don't know, Daniel Craig looks like a badass in this scene, and it is utterly ridiculous, but I enjoy things like the occasional, like, jumping from the one thing onto the crane and then just like fixing his tie because he's a badass. Like, he can carry doing something like that, whereas some of the other Bonds I don't think can. The motorcycle chase I thought was pretty good. The train fight, I don't like the incompetence of Moneypenny, but I'll chalk that up to it being a character beat. I don't know. I enjoy the ridiculousness of this opening scene.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple reasons I don't like it. It drags on too long for my taste. Like I said, that's one of the problems I'll have with any title sequence if it just lasts too long. This, of course, was the first Bond film that did not, well, actually, I guess Quantum of Solace didn't open with the gun barrel either, but there was a specific reason for that. This one just didn't do it because they chose not to do it. Instead, you got this weird, like, distorted long hallway shot of Daniel Craig at the beginning of the film. For whatever reason, this one just doesn't do it for me. So that's why I did, but it didn't make either list. Like, I didn't find it offensive enough to put it on the bottom, but it was nowhere near my top for sure. My number six, and we might have to wait on this cause maybe Micah has it higher. We'll see, is License to Kill. So yeah, I like the title sequence for License to Kill, because it's very unique. You get to see, the greatest representation of James Bond and Felix Leiter's friendship in this scene, while they're on a mission, which is fucking hilarious. You get the introduction of the villain, Franz Sanchez, who is very different than any other Bond villain before. You immediately get to see his really sadistic nature, you know, fucking whipping his girlfriend with a stingray tail for stepping out on him, basically. And you just have a really fun action sequence where basically Bond and Leiter on a Coast Guard helicopter hook Sanchez's plane as he's trying to flee to Cuban airspace. And then they get to do this badass thing where they hook him, you know, they tell fucking Grandel Bush, like, take him home, boy. And then they parachute in to Felix's wedding. They did all this while wearing their very formal tuxedos, by the way, when all this is going on. And then they get, and like I said, the cool shot at the end where the bridesmaids pick up their parachutes, which are white, like bridal trains, basically, as they're going into the chapel to get Felix married. It's just a fun title sequence. I liked it a whole lot. So,
where are we at?
We're at number five.
Four, five.
Yes.
This is where I put The World Is Not Enough.
Okay, I'm curious to hear you laud this.
So I enjoy the first part of that. Like you said, the first part of the sequence is some stellar Bond action, right? And I get that it's very much broken up into two parts. It's the first scene and then the boat chase scene. If the boat chase scene were cut in half, then it would be a little higher for me, because the boat chase scene is, that's the thing that makes it a little too long for me. But I do enjoy Pierce Brosnan getting into modes of conveyance that are ridiculous and just driving around, like, all around different European streets.
That is certainly one of his trademarks, is getting into ridiculous modes of conveyance. So.
But no, the first part of this action scene, the first part of this opening scene makes it for me. And the boat chase scene is the one that puts it, that kind of keeps it where it is in the middle of my top 10.
Very interesting. My number five, we can talk about Quantum of Solace now. This is the best vehicle chase in the James Bond franchise for my money.
Hmm.
And like I said, it starts on a great note, cutting back and forth between the, you know, wide shot that's zooming in and like the real close shot of the car, you know, of the Aston Martin driving is a great way to kind of ramp you up. And the thing that I love about the car chase is the music is restrained in a very appropriate fashion. You really get to hear the sounds of the cars a lot more, which a lot of movies do. And those tend to be better car chases. Like I always go back to the car chase from Bullet, where when the chase starts in earnest, the soundtrack just the musical soundtrack just completely drops off, and all you hear is the car engines as they're chasing around. I think that's a really effective way to do it. And let me also tell you that the end sequence where Bond grabs his rifle that he has in the passenger seat as the other car comes into view and just fucking lays into them is the best audio that I've ever heard of a gunshot in any film ever. And then it launches the car off the cliff, and it ends on a perfect note where, you know, Bond calmly pulls into this underground, you know, MI6 secret area and pops the door open. And there's disheveled Mr. White, who's been in the trunk the entire time during this sequence. And you're just like, time to get out. And then you cut to the title sequence. It's magical.
It's, this is a scene that is simple but effective in what it's trying to do, right? It's a car chase, but it is a badass car chase. And to all of your points that you made, like I'm looking at the scene now and this car gets annihilated, but at the same time, like, it's still James Bond looks like a badass in the scene. And then, like you said, it's capped off with all of this. Like, after you think about it, after you see the end of it, all of this, Mr. White was in the trunk.
Right.
it's funny, man. Yeah, I dig it, man. I dig it. It's one of the better parts of this movie for me.
So what do you have at number four?
Number four. Now, everybody knows my feelings about this movie. But I got to tell you, Moonraker has an excellent opening title sequence for my money.
I want you to tell, I know why you're going to laud it, and I will tell you why it didn't make either list once you're done espousing its praises.
So it is just, I love practical stunts like this, especially like James Bond practical stunts. And the scene is, everybody loves this scene for the same reason, right? It's the skydiving. And there are some ridiculous things about it, right? Like, you know, Jaws is 7 feet tall. How the hell is Jaws going to hide on that plane? Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. I think about the stupidest shit, but skydiving while fighting, and like being pushed out of the plane, Bond has to think on his feet. He sees the pilot, the evil, you know, pilot. He's evil because he has a mustache. And he sees him, and you know, he goes down. There's a mid-air fight, and he fucking overpowers the guy, grabs the thing, pushes the other guy away, that's not all. Here comes Jaws. Here comes big ass Jaws flying down, right? He gets into a fight with Jaws. He fucking pushes him off, does his parachute thing. And then the one part about this scene
is why it's not on the list.
Is the fucking end, man, where Jaws just falls into this circus tent, and I'm just like, yo, you ruined one of the sequences.
Not just falls into the circus tent, but flaps his arm like a bird.
Yeah, like a bird.
As he's free falling. into the 10. That's what took it. Would have been in the top 10 if not for that. This is arguably one of the best practical stunts in the series because they actually had to storyboard this whole fight in midair, and they had to do it over the course of 88 different parachute jumps in this film. And like literally like they do the parachute jump, they'd film, you know, three to five seconds of the sequence, you know, get down to the ground, get back up, do it again. And then they have to remember like where they left off at each point in the fight, basically, as they went back and did all this stuff. Very, very cool. Very, very interesting thing. But like I said, as is the case with many of the stunts in the Roger Moore era, they couldn't leave well enough alone, and they cheapen it with either shitty sound effect or just a ridiculous sequence. And Jaws should not be walking away from that fucking circus tent or no. So
I mean, he fell from 30,000 feet and broke his fall on a circus tent, guys. Like, come on, man. That's the only thing that ruins it for me. But I'm not gonna, and no, you know, I'm growing. See, because normally I would let something like that just bottom. It's the worst, right? But no, I really appreciate that free fall fight. Like it was pretty awesome.
My number four, Micah mentioned it earlier in his list, is Goldfinger. For title sequences, this is, no pun intended, this is kind of the gold standard for Bond title sequences. Goldfinger was a very important movie in the Bond franchise, as we've discussed, because it established a lot of the tropes and a lot of the formula that would persist throughout all the films. This title sequence is no different. Bond is on a mini adventure. It's relatively unrelated. The only thing that makes it related is that the end of this gets him to, you know, a rehab place in Florida where, you know, he runs into Goldfinger for the first time. But he's just blowing up a heroin lab, basically. He does that, you know, infiltrates it. This is the, you know, he's wearing the wetsuit. He plants the plastic explosive. Of course, underneath the wetsuit is the famous white tuxedo that he tops off with the carnation, you know, gets into the dalliance with the woman, but she's really just trying to set him up. And you know, he has the bathtub fight with the henchman that tries to kill him. Everyone knows this title sequence. You could probably kind of see it in your head as we're talking about it. And it's just note perfect. It doesn't last long at all. It's very quick. You get to see every part of James Bond's like character and personality in the different parts of this scene. It's awesome. What I don't know what more you can say about it.
It is awesome, and it shows that James Bond is a highly competent, you know, spy. Like he knows how to, he gets his job done, gets a little, you know, action on the side, but he still has the wherewithal to like look into this woman's eyes and see a man's reflection trying to fucking kill him. But it shows that he can think on his feet also. And, you know, the struggle that he has with the one dude, and he throws him in the tub, and he's like, and then the dude grabs the gun and he's like, uh-oh, I got to think quickly. Bam. Let me throw this electrical thing in the tub. Like that's a Bond moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just the top it off with the quip at the end is just like, all right, this is magnifique. This is excellent. You know what's not excellent? The fucking bird on his head.
Well, you know, you can never have perfection.
So that bird on his head really bothered me. So it takes a stellar sequence, and That's very Roger Moore-esque, but leave it to Roger Moore to fucking make it more ridiculous, right? But yeah, I mean, look, we said it before. Final Fantasy, or Goldfinger is the Final Fantasy VII of this franchise, and that's, you know, not a dig. It's a compliment. Like it's the one that brought everybody in. Mm-hmm. My number three. Is Thunderball.
Ah.
And I one of the reasons I like this is the fight between Bavar and Bond. This was the fourth movie. This was the fight that really, like, these guys took the gloves off, right? Like, in terms of, like, opening title sequences, right? Like these dudes are trying to really kill each other. And it's very visceral, right? And it is, you know, you see it, and it's shocking, right? Because you see this woman come in from a funeral, and all of a sudden James Bond punches her in the face, and you're like, wait, what the hell? Like, and then he says something to the effect of, you shouldn't have opened that car door by yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. Which, and it's like, oh, he realized that that was a man because, he opened the door, whereas a woman would wait to have the door open for them. Like, oh, okay, I get it. And you know, Bond is, it gets a little silly, but I actually kind of like it.
I like, right? The jetpack because too.
I like the jetpack. Yeah, I like, man, the jetpack. I do. I do. And it worked. So, you know, I love this opening title sequences. This opening title sequence. And, you know, safety first, like, you got to put that helmet on, right? And he flies out and he meets his French, you know, beautiful woman assistant, and he's like, yeah, you gotta, you know, every man should have one or something like that. And then they get in the car and they're still being chased, and then you get a little bit of the gadget car, mm-hmm, at the end. So yeah, I love this opening sequence.
Yeah, it's and like I said, it starts off cool too, because like I said, they have the close up of the casket that has the JB monogram on it, and yeah, like I said, you get the initial what the fuck, like they like, yeah, they like to play that game with you a lot in these opening title sequences here and there. Yeah, like you said, the fight is really cool. The way Bond deduced that it was not that the widow was not who she alleged to be was clever. Like I said, it might slide by some people, especially, yeah, in this day and age. But I, you know, back in that day, that was, you know, very much how things worked. So, and like you said, the fight was very cool. Choking him out with the fucking poker by the fireplace, and then as he's leaving the room, stopping to throw the lilies on the dead body, a very Connery Bond move, for sure. He actually had quite a few of those in this movie alone, like pausing to eat the grape before he, you know, left the room later in the film. So,
yeah,
very Connery-esque. Yeah, I had this at this was my number 8, but I understand why Micah had it higher. I can certainly, yeah, agree. My number 3, I have a feeling Micah's going to shut me up for at least 2 seconds, is The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah, you're going to have to, you're gonna, yeah, have to be quiet. look, we're here.
Oh, good. So yeah, so it's your here. Number 2. Okay.
It's my number 2. Yeah, it's my number 2. Look, this is the most, like, I can appreciate some good lighthearted jingoism. And this has that a bit, right? Like, Bond is doing his thing, right? He's making out with this chick, right? And all of a sudden he gets this 1970s text message where it's just this big long strip, and it's like, we need you, James. And he gets up off of this woman, and she's like, but James, I need you. And he's like, England needs me, or some shit like that. And I'm like,
with a perfectly placed, like, little triumphant musical cue.
Yeah,
she's like, but James, I need you, and he's like, so does England. And then you get the little, little musical cue. So,
and it turns out that she is, you know, a ne'er do well. So she warns assassins that Bond has left, so that Bond can, so that they can go get him. And then what happens is a very, very cool skiing sequence. Where James Bond is eluding these dudes, and then at one point fucking turns into a biathlete and spins around on his ski, picks up his pole, and which happens to be a gun, and then shoots a dude, right?
Right. And the thing I love about it is that this death actually becomes very important later in the film, but it's completely innocuous at the time.
Right. And then to cap it off, you know, this scene is not very long. It's like 4 minutes. To cap it off, you see James Bond fall off a ski right off a cliff, and you're like, "Uh-oh, what's going to happen?" Right, and then his skis are falling off. Right, he's not in any type of formation. Right, that you would normally see a skier when they leap off of something, and all of a sudden, it's all the sound is drowned out. Yes. Right. And all of a sudden you see a parachute, the music cue hits, the Union Jack parachute is open. And I'm like, fuck yeah, man. Like, let's fucking do this, man. I love it.
Yeah. Talk about, like, for a score that I'm not an enormous fan of, like we've talked about the Spy Love Me score, just like I said, having the dead silence as he's falling. And then all of a sudden the parachute slowly opens up. And when it's fully, as soon as it fully becomes open, you get the James Bond theme, like, kicking in right away. We talked about it when we did the movie. This scene got a standing ovation during the premiere. Like, yeah. That's how fucking impactful it was. I'm shocked I have it at number three. I feel like I underrated this one. And they even tie it into the title sequence beautifully, because these hands come up kind of cradling the parachute as he's coming down. So, like, it is about as perfect a title sequence as you can get. The only knock that I would have on it is that it does have a lot of the terrible the Marvin Hamlisch score, which is just so dated and so. Like the thing that gets me is, like, when you hear the Bond theme, like, it sounds kind of normal until you get to that first break, and it's like, "Boo!" I'm just like, "Oh, there it is, there it is." The disco soundtrack for James Bond. So maybe that's why I have it low. Is the score mars it a little bit for me. My number two. Now that I know that our number ones don't match up, I'm pretty sure that my number two is going to be your number one. Okay. So I'm pretty sure we're going to have to wait to talk about it. So let's talk about my, I'm not even going to say the name, because I'm that confident that it's your number one. So let's talk about my number one first. And that is Casino Royale. I am offended that you have this ranked so low. I cannot think of a more effective opening scene for the specific film that it's in. This was the best absolute way that you could have introduced James Bond. Showing the juxtaposition of his character, like the cool, calm operative, smash cutting with, like, the fucking brutal fight in the bathroom. The use of color is fantastic. Like, the fact that you have the sequence black and white until he kills the agent and the blood comes down for the gun barrel, and that's red, and that's the first bit of color that you get in the film, kind of signifying that's the moment he becomes 007, essentially. Like I said, outsmarting the section chief in Prague, you know, the dude's clever. He's got Bond talking, you know, he's getting the gun. All of a sudden he brings the gun up to shoot and it's empty. And, you know, Bond's like, "Oh, I figured out where you keep your gun." He's like, so I suppose it's not all lost.
Why did I rank this low?
I don't know. It's really good.
Because I love this movie, and I'm looking at the scene now.
Like, I love the noir, like, the angles they use for filming the sequences inside the office. Like, they have these slightly crooked, you know, dark angles that they're using just to kind of have that noir feel, which it just works. It just fucking works in the scene.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm looking at and it's very different. Like you said, it's a stark contrast from, like, the bathroom fight, which is just incredibly visceral and shaky cam and chaotic. And then you immediately cut to Prague, and, you know, you see the slight Dutch angles and the overshadowed. Yeah, wow. Why did I rank this low?
Like I said, this is a great artistic title sequence. It's just really fucking awesome. And like I said, not only did they show Bond being a badass, like, during the bathroom fight, but they also really, like, they show you just from that fight sequence that this movie is going to be different. Like, they're going to leverage his humanity, because, like, as he's fighting this dude, like, he, like, is fucking exhausted. He's ramped up. Like, the look on his face is just like, Jesus Christ. Like, you know, he's not cool, calm, collected in that moment. But then, of course, you get the sequence where the Prague operative realizes that he's fucking toast. And, you know, he's asking Bond about the first, you know, killing his man, basically. And, you know, he tries to assure Bond, like, when he knows he's in for it, that he's like, oh, don't worry, the second kill. He was going to say the second kill is easier than the first. Bond cuts him off mid-sentence by shooting him in the head and is like, yeah, it was. that just fucking rolls out. It was note perfect. It was note perfect.
I still wouldn't put this as my number one, but I could probably flip this with The World Is Not Enough, now that I'm looking at this list again, mm-hmm. and now that I'm actually watching this one, because I thought I remembered it. But yeah, no, it's excellent. It's an excellent scene. So your number two
is your number one. I guarantee it. Just say it.
I mean, look, I don't know if it's because it was my first.
Yeah.
So. you never forget your first, right? But, you know, I'm sorry. It's GoldenEye. Like, I love everything about GoldenEye. I love this opening sequence. It runs a little long.
It's a little long, but it's connected. Like, the difference between this and The World's Not Enough is that The World's Not Enough literally had two distinct scenes. This is all one contiguous story that they're telling.
But this bungee jump is amazing. And it's shot beautifully. And, you know, we see these two dudes on this mission that is essentially, you think, oh, okay, this is just a regular mission, right? And keep in mind, this is the first James Bond movie that most people have seen in 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And this is the first one I've seen. And this is a hell of a way to start a franchise for me, or to restart a franchise for most people. You get Bond being slightly brash, thinking he knows better, right? Because he set the charges for 3 minutes instead of six, didn't tell his partner. All that comes back around eventually. Mm-hmm. I love this opening scene. Jumping off the dam and towards the end going to getting in the falling plane, like having to try and free fall faster than the fucking plane to get in it and pull up at the last possible minute. Now, the way that plane was in free fall, I mean, there's no way James Bond would have done it. But, you know, James Bond can operate any mode of conveyance. So
you're telling me that diving into the plane and like shaking the throttle or shaking the gears that is not gonna get the plane to come up. Basically, how dare you? No, this, like you said, the sequence here is great. Your first look at Bond's face in the film is fantastic because, of course, it's upside down. He's hanging from the vent in the bathroom and knocks out the guard reading the paper. Yeah, like I said, you immediately get to see the juxtaposition between him and Alec Trevelyan, which and that's the other thing, too. This sequence sets up so many things for later in the film. But because the twist is completely unforeseen when the first time you watch this movie, you don't realize any of that. At the time,
right?
Like you're just seeing a normal mission play out, but there's so much later in the film that calls back to just this one mission. Like I said, I love the, you know, Bond slowly, you know, moving the tanks using the tank cart as cover as all the Soviet guards have their guns trained on him, and the one dude accidentally fires his gun, and when, you know, Arumov turns around and shoots him, and then basically like kind of turns to Bond like, all right, keep going. Like you do your thing. And like I said, I love like when Bond reaches the conveyor belt, I love the little smirk that Arumov gives him. Like there's so many subtle things in the sequence that are just really, really good. That make it like the totality. This is definitely the most action sequence of all of these title sequences for sure. And like you said, it was the first Bond movie that I really watched as well, as we talked about on this podcast before. So this was my first introduction to James Bond, which was amazing.
Yeah. So, there you go, folks. We don't agree on everything.
No.
But you know what? A lot of our, what, like maybe half of our top 10 is the same. It's just in different orders.
Yeah. So like I said, you got a little more insight as to what me and Micah like in these cold opens.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't wait for the next Bond movie. I can't wait for the next cold open. These things are awesome. They're pretty great. I think I said dishonorable. Any honorable mentions? Dishonorable mentions?
As far as honorable mentions go, like I said, I love the parachute jump sequence that we talked about with Moonraker, but it didn't quite rank high enough for me to make either of the lists. The one I struggled the most with was on Her Majesty's Secret Service. That's a tough one. That's a tough one to figure.
That gets a dishonorable mention for me. Simply because, the fourth wall breaking and, you know, this is your chance. This is your chance to establish this new actor as James Bond. And twice you refer to the previous guy, the guy that everybody loves. Like, you can't do that, man. You're setting yourself up for undue criticism. And then the action scene itself wasn't that great. Like, at one point, I swear, like, George Lazenby does a Mortal Kombat uppercut where he ducks down and then jumps up and punches him. Like, it's the scene's not that great. And I enjoyed the movie, but that opening scene just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, the only honorable mention I would have was my number 11 would have been Tomorrow Never Dies. As with all the Brosnan ones, it tends to run on a bit long, but I think it's a really cool sequence with, you know, Brosnan with Bond infiltrating the Black Arms Bazaar, basically, and stealing, you know, getting the plane back that has the nuclear missiles attached to it.
Yeah.
So
my honorable mention, I think I mentioned it earlier, was The Man with the Golden Gun, just because, you know, it would have been on there, but no James Bond.
So that's fair.
So thank you, Brad. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you for being members of TMP Premium. Make sure you tune into all of our offerings, free and premium, including Look Forward, this show, The Man with the Golden Tongues, Airing of Grievances, and our regular shows, Black on Black Cinema, The Nerdpocalypse, Dense Pixels. Thank you for listening. Next month.
Oh, it's exciting times ahead.
The Mission Impossible series hits its stride, and we will be reviewing Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. So I can't wait for that.
Yeah. It's like I said, it kicks off, what is one of the finest trilogies, I guess you can say, in espionage action movies. Even though those films are two of them are directly related, but you know, this one kind of stands apart. It's gonna be a good time, though.
It's gonna be a good time. So until next month, The Men with the Golden Tongues will return.